straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 332, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. I'm Cedric Golden, joined as usual by Taylor's favorite duck, Kirk Bowles. Duck, big fish on the hook today in our podcast. We're going to hit spring football later, but let's get to hoops. Rodney Terry, fresh off season two. Horns get to the tournament, finish 21-13, beat Colorado State, lose to Rick Barnes in Tennessee, and one that went down to the wire. Looking forward to 2025. Rodney, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me today, Cedric and Kirk. I appreciate you guys having me on.
I guess you're using your frequent flyer miles a lot with recruiting and the portal and everything like that. You spend many nights in Austin, or are you gone all the time?
Man, I tell you what, the portal, it takes on its own identity. It really does. I mean, we're in the fourth cycle here this year of the portal and trying to construct a team again, much like we did the first year we arrived on campus again here 3 years ago. But again, yeah, it's a monster. You know, in the midst of that, you have the NCAA tournament going on. You also have the Final Four going on. So it never stops. It's 24/7.
Never does stop. And you were at the Final Four, right, in Phoenix, and you're rubbing elbows with all the big wigs, and run into any old friends, or tell me about your experience at the Final Four.
Well, the Final Four is always – it's our national convention. So, you know, I can't recall missing a Final Four since I've gotten into college coaching. I think it's always a great time for us to continue to network, continue to see guys. Sometimes you don't get a chance to see, but one time a year, we get a chance to have our head coaches meetings. You get a chance to, grab a bite to eat with some guys that, you know, some of your colleagues, you don't get a chance to spend much time with, on the road, in a fairly decent setting. You get a chance to go to the games and watch four teams that have earned their way to playing at the highest level. And the games were really good, competitive games, good teams, well-coached. You just kind of get a chance to socialize a little bit and stuff. So it's always a great time.
Man, I thought that UConn was a juggernaut. And so hats off to Purdue. I mean, they tried their damnedest, but UConn's just too deep. In this current day and age of the portal and – it's not like it was 20 years ago when you knew what you had coming back every year. How big was that for what Hurley has built at UConn these last couple of years, losing his starting lineup and still going back to back?
Well, I think he's done Danny's done a great job. I've known Danny a long time. I've known him as a high school coach, and he ran his high school practices just like a college practice, you know, and things. So Danny's been doing a great job for a long time, and we've had a good relationship for quite some time. We got a chance to play those guys this year in the Garden in New York and got a chance to see them firsthand. We recruited several of the guys that are on that national championship team. You talk about Tristan Newton. You know, Newton was a guy there in El Paso. I get a hard time about a lot of times for not taking at UTEP. But I had some pretty good guards at the time. I mean, he's a heck of a player, and he's turned into a really good player. Obviously, he's been the most valuable player of the tournament the last 2 years. But we had some pretty good players in Sule Boom and, you know, Jamal Bienemy and Keontae Kennedy. You know, we had a good slew of guards in there ourselves, you know, and stuff. Jordan Latham had a really good tournament run this year at Morehead State. But they give me a hard time over that. But not taking Tristan, as you tell. But no, he's been a great transfer at UConn. He's played great for Danny there. Cam Spencer, we tried hard on Cam ourselves a little bit and had several calls to him as well last year, and came in and played a great role for their team this year. He had some continuity with a few guys that came back from last year's championship team. as well. You throw in a really talented freshman in Castle that had a chance to start for him. You know, their reserve guys that came in off the bench, you know, reserve point guard came in and played a vital role in giving them some bench production as well. The big kid Johnson came in and played terrific against us. I mean, Johnson was really the X factor in our game, but airspace guy, made a lot of big plays. But when I go to the games, I go to watch to see how the teams are built. So I'm watching exactly, you know, how the pieces are put together, because every year in the landscape of college athletics, college basketball, you are putting together a new roster every year, and you've got to try to max that roster out for that season. You have to thank the guys that you had the previous season for giving you what they gave you. And if they choose to come back and give us continuity, that's great. If they choose to go somewhere else, then you have to, again, you know, support them in their decision in terms of going elsewhere and doing something different. That's just the lay of the land right now, what everybody's having to do in college basketball right now. But, you know, I think it's important that you really work hard. And I know for us, we start with character of the individual. And then obviously we look at the basketball, and we always know that there's a business side of it, you know. And every cycle of this transfer portal has changed and gotten a little bit more difficult to navigate through. You know, we're in the fourth cycle of really kind of the third really hard cycle of NIL. And it's really changed the landscape of recruiting. It really has. You still have to recruit the individuals and their families and things of that nature there. But the business component, okay, is also a major factor involved in recruiting as well, you know. And, you know, you don't see a lot of kids right now just popping right off the bat and making decisions quickly in regards to where they're going, because all those components, they all got to line up the right way. And it is important for them to reach a happy median in terms of the name, image, and likeness. That's a big part of the process. Mm-hmm. So we embrace that. We understand what that entails. It's made it a longer process than just guys just saying, I'm going to go over here and this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, I was wondering if in the whole recruiting process and transfer portal process, do all of them mention NIL? Does it come up with every person you talk to?
No, every guy, you know, and rightfully so. Every guy has an agent that they're working with. Very few guys don't have agents that represent them. Most of the guys that are in the portal and guys that we're looking at are elite level prospects in the portal that have had a level of production. Right. So with the level of production comes, name, image, and likeness, marketability. And so, you know, it's part of the territory. It's what you're working with. And at the end of the day, you know, like I said before, you have to have a happy median on that situation to where all parties are on the same page.
And is it competitive?
I got to ask you, I know that Chris Johnson, Gavin Perriman, and Alex Anemekwe, boy, I hope I said that right. Oh, he's gone. I don't care. Are leaving. They're in the portal. How hard do you have to recruit your own guys now? I mean, you look around tomorrow and somebody else will be gone. How difficult is that for you?
Well, I think what happens a lot of times too, Cedric, I know for us, speaking from our experience here, you know, we play our last game that Saturday. You know, we travel back here and we get a chance to go over and support our women's program. And they had a fantastic year, by the way. And Vic did a great job with his group this year. And going all the way to the Elite Eight with a chance to go to the Final Four, fantastic year for them. But we get a chance to come back and support them Sunday. And then, as you move into Monday, got a chance to go down and watch Kevin play. Kevin was in town, so you always want to support your own as well when they're that close and stuff. But then shortly thereafter, you have to try to immediately jump into the recruiting area in terms of the portal. I mean, you like to keep playing so you don't have to deal with the portal for a while, but Danny said it the whole way. He's like, man, let's keep playing, you know, let's try to win a national championship so we don't have to deal with the portal. But you jump right into it. You got portal recruiting. And then it's really important, I think, before you go out to the Final Four, that you sit down and visit with every member of your team. every guy that was on your team and on your roster this season, whether they were out of eligibility, still had remaining eligibility, you need to sit down and visit with your players and get a good pulse in terms of how they thought the season went, you know, their weaknesses, their strengths, what they need to continue to improve moving forward, and just really have a really good talk with them and stuff. And I thought we got a chance to do that. And if there was indeed a guy that felt like, hey, you know what, the fit wasn't right for me, or, you know, I'm looking for an opportunity, a fresh start somewhere else, you know, you just thank that young man for what he gave us that year, you know, both on the court, off the court, and, you know, let them know you're going to always be in their lives, you know, the rest of their lives. And if there's anything we can do to help you, we're always going to try to help you.
And you lose a lot of seniors, a lot of scoring firepower with Dylan Dessou and Max Asmus, and two highly impact players on your team. People are wondering, Dylan Mitchell, the forward, coming back for his junior year, or is he looking to go pro or transfer? And Tyrese Hunter, your junior point guard, what's the latest on them?
Yeah, I think, again, around college basketball, there are a lot of guys losing their top scores, whether they have eligibility or no eligibility remaining. You look around the country, a lot of elite starters or testing the market and going elsewhere as well. But just like the previous year, we lost a lot on the Elite 18. A great portion of our scoring went out the door on that team. So, you know, again, Kurt, every year you're gonna have to go back out and, you know, put together another roster that complements each guy that you're trying to build around. We have a really good young freshman coming in, Trey Johnson, who we expect to come in and do great things for us in the year that he's here with us on campus. You know, it's our job as a staff to put, you know, older, talented players around him. You're looking at going out to having to fill a number of different positions, you know, whether that be, you know, guys that can make plays, whether that be guys that can make plays with their back to the basket, facing the basket, or guys in decision-making positions. So we've got our work cut out for us, just like we did last season. But I'll say this, in my 12 years here at Texas, when we've always had opportunity, we've always put together a really good team and put together a really good product on the floor. So we're excited about the challenges of going out and putting together another really good team again. Your question about Dylan Mitchell, you know, Dylan was one of the guys, you know, again, all the guys I had a chance to sit down and meet with and talked about some of the things we did well this season, some of the things we needed to continue to get better with moving forward. You know, obviously he had a chance to double his minutes this past year. He had a chance to double his production from a year ago as well. So I think for him, it's just a matter of sitting down with his family and deciding what's best for him moving forward.
How about Tyrese Hunter?
Oh, yeah, Tyrese.
Yeah, I think, again, likewise. I think all of our guys, for that matter, you know, I sit down and I have a great discussion with them in terms of, you know, what I just discussed there in terms of what you did well, what you need to continue to improve on. You know, are you happy here? You know, were there things you didn't like here? I get into it all. I mean, we turn over the rock and we talk about everything. But then at the end of the day, it's up to them to go back and get with their families and decide, indeed, if this is still the right fit for you and where you want to continue, you know, your education and playing at a very high level.
We just love watching Max get his a little guy getting his shots like that. I mean, Calvin Murphy was who came to mind for me. It's hard for a little guy to get his shot in a land of giants. Trey Johnson is 6'6", and I watched him at the McDonald's All-American game. Lefty hit 5 threes. Kind of made me remember how cool it was to have a big guard at your disposal. I mean, Marcus Carr was a nice size, but he's bigger. He's taller than Marcus. What kind of skill set is he going to bring to your offense, and how does that dynamic change? Because you got a big guard now instead of two small ones.
You know, Cedric, there's probably a lot of people on this podcast that don't even know Calvin Murphy and how good a player Calvin Murphy was.
We're
you know,
old, R.T. We're old.
Hey, we're old. You start dating yourself when you start giving those
Niagara University.
In that regards, I mean, Calvin Murphy was a bad dude, you know, and let alone his size. I mean, that dude was one of the best players in the league and one of the best small guys to ever play small guards to play in the NBA and at an incredible level. But when you talk about Max, I mean, we went in the portal last year, and he's one of the top guys that we went after. And again, losing a lot of production with Marcus Carr, Jabari Rice, and Timmy Allen, who, by the way, got a chance to play in his first NBA game and scored his first points in an NBA game. We're really excited about Timmy getting that opportunity, man. Couldn't happen to a better guy, you know, and stuff. So incredible story. But when you talk about Max, man, we went in there and we knew we were going after a guy that was a guy that could be the face of the program. You know, he's a guy that class guy off the court, class guy on the court, had already up to this point had an incredible college career already, and you know, wanted to come to Texas and really build on his brand. Grew up in Texas, having a chance to come here and play at the flagship program in the state of Texas and be on the main stage every night. I mean, he had a phenomenal year for us. I mean, Max did some great things for us. And every night being game plan the way he was game plan for every night and not really having a consistent third score. I mean, I thought he had a phenomenal year for us this past season. And I think, again, you know, having had a chance to come here and be a part of the Texas brand, he's going to be able to, you know, use that the rest of his life, you know, and it changed his whole life, you know. And so, again, I can't speak to him saying that, but I would think that would be something that he would echo in that regard. So it was an honor to get a chance to coach one of the best guys to ever play college basketball, and to have that kind of career doing it was exceptional. Max was an everyday guy. I mean, he's a pro. He comes in every day and he handles his business off the court academically. You know, you get to the court, high level on the court. So he was a total package, you know. So, you know, the coach of Max Asemus in college, man, it's a special opportunity to be able to do it. It's like coaching Kevin Durant in college. It's special. You don't get those kind of guys every year to be a part of your program. And we were able to have that one season here. And, man, what a great journey. What a great ride with that youngster. And, again, the best is yet to come for him in the future moving forward. When you start talking about Trey Johnson, I'll give you another old school comp again. Dale Ellis. You talk about his size. Jeez. Dale Ellis played at Tennessee, had a great career in the NBA, but Dale Ellis was one of the premier shooters in the NBA during his time playing. And, you know, Trey Johnson is a guy that, unlike a little bit of Dale Ellis, I think Trey is a little bit more of a playmaker and has playmaking ability. You know, this past year when we really, you know, got hot and heavy, we were already hot and heavy the whole time with Trey from the time we got the job here. But you know, over the last few years, he's had a chance to really get better distributing the basketball and making decisions with the basketball. Trey Johnson is over the last 10 years in, give or take 10, 15 years in Texas high school basketball, he's one of the most lethal scorers to ever come out. You know, and then when you start talking about his size, he's 6'6". He's a big guard who's really kind of, you know, just still filling out. You know, I got a chance to coach his dad at Baylor, and Richard was a really good player as well. And, you know, already had that size. And you're looking at Richard, you're looking at Trey, you're like, man, he's going to fill out a little bit more as well. And he's done that. He's filled out just in this last year, leaving Dallas and going over to Link Academy and playing with a really good roster over there and playing on the national level. Night in and night out, you know, he's really taking his game to another level. I mean, he's a top five player in the country. You know, he's going to come in and really, you know, put his footprints on this program in a big way. There'll be a night where I think he scores the ball extremely well. There'll be nights where he's a facilitator and he makes incredible passes to guys and sets guys up as well. So he's an incredible piece to build around. In terms of being a marquee player, you know, who has a chance to be a face of the program as well moving forward this season.
Is he kind of a one-and-done player? I mean, he's got that kind of talent, doesn't he?
He definitely has that talent for sure, no doubt about it. You know, Trey's an NBA player, you know, and he's a guy who has incredible habits right now coming in. I liken him a lot to Kevin Durant in a lot of ways, to be honest with you. Just cut from the same cloth in terms of the work ethic. Kevin Durant was a tremendous talent, But Kevin's work ethic and his habits were elite, just like his talent level was elite. Trey Johnson is an elite talent, but his habits are also elite. You talk about a guy, when he brought him here on a visit, you know, he wasn't about coming in and going out and being out, you know, on a Friday or Saturday night. This guy's in the gym at 12 o'clock playing one-on-one to 1 in the morning on his visit.
He wanted it.
So when you talk about work ethic, you talk about habits, he has incredible habits coming in to embark on his college career.
Yeah. And as far as the transfer portal, I guess you got needs all over the place because you have I don't say you have an empty roster, but you got spots to fill, don't you?
Gotta go to Walmart.
Yeah, we've got a lot of work to do. We really do. And we had a lot of work to do a season ago. And you know, I will say this, I think we're much further along than we were a year ago. One, because, you know, we got off to a late start last year. You know, we played late. You know, I got the job late. You know, our staff wasn't assembled until the middle of the summer, you know, so we were behind the eight ball. We had several guys kind of say, hey, you know what, I'm going to go do something different and go elsewhere. So we had to put a whole new roster last year together and stuff. But again, I've said it before and I've said it many times, not in an arrogant way or anything like that. But, you know, I've been in Texas 12 years and I don't think there's ever been a time that we've never been able to get out and get players and really good players to come in here and put together a really good team. My staff's working extremely hard right now, identifying guys that can come in and be great pieces to what it takes to be in a successful team here in Texas. So we're working at it tirelessly every day and very confident we'll be able to put the right guys because it's all about the right guys and the right fit when you talk about putting a team together. And I thought we did a pretty good job of that late, considering the time frame we had to put a team together. And again, I look for us to do another exceptional job in the portal. Probably not as happening as fast as a lot of people want it to happen. But again, I attribute some of that to the dynamics of the next cycle of the portal in NIL. It's totally different. And just like anything, you have to adapt and adjust. And that's what we're doing right now. But at the end of the day, when the dust settles, you know, we're gonna get the guys we're supposed to get. And we'll put together a pretty good team here that we'll be excited about.
Yeah, one thing I want to ask you about Kendall Weaver before we let you go. What's your expectation of him next year?
You know what? We've got 3 good weeks right now to continue to work and getting better. You know, I think Kendall Weaver is a guy that emerged for us this past season, was a big-time star in his role this past year. I think, again, he's just scratching the surface on how good he's going to be. Came in today, this morning, had an incredible workout, you know, our first week workout of the spring. And he was in great shape and doing a lot of great things out there. And I think, again, you know, Kendall reminds me of a kid that I coached years ago, and I said this to him in our meeting. It reminded me of Tyler Johnson, who played for me 3 years at Fresno State. You know, it was a guy that just really, you know, kind of emerged throughout the course of his career and each year got better and better and put himself in a position to be an 8-year NBA player who made, you know, significant amount of money over his career, you know, as an undrafted player. People are like, where'd this kid come from? You know, wow. But he has a lot of same type of attributes that Tyler Johnson had, you know. And I said, Kendall, you have a chance, you know, to be an NBA player. The things that you're going to have to do, though, to really get to that point, you're going to have to really, again, just like any youngster to have a chance to play at that level, your habits have to be off the charts. You know, you got to be the first one into practice. You have to have a pre-practice, a post-practice. I mean, you got to have a routine. You know, you got to come back to the gym at night. You got to be the first one in the morning. But you have all the tools to play at the next level. But, you know, I always say Tyler Johnson was a self-made NBA player. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think Kendall has that same opportunity. He's a guy this past year that made winning plays for us and, you know, was really instrumental in our success this past season.
Well, Rodney, we are looking forward to 2025. I know you've still got a lot of work to do before you head to the Bahamas for vacation or
wherever. No Bahamas, it is, I wish.
Wherever it is you rich guys go. I'm going to Round Rock for a couple of weeks, but if we get approved for that. Always a pleasure. Thanks for taking some time out. Enjoy the conversation and looking forward to next season.
Likewise, man. I appreciate you guys taking time to have me here today. And hopefully again, we'll continue to have the support of Longhorn Nation. Longhorn Nation has been great in supporting our program. And again, just know our staff's working tirelessly every day to put a great product on the floor. And guys are going to represent the program both on and off the court the right way.
Thanks, Rodney. Good luck to you, man.
Thank you, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Doug, before we move on to football, man, Rodney hit very good on UConn basketball, a juggernaut that the Longhorns gave all they could handle earlier in the season. Be remiss if we didn't give a shout-out to the women. What a great season. What a great tournament. Women's basketball delivered, beat the men at the box office, not the box office, but at the Nielsen's. More eyeballs on Iowa, South Carolina than UConn, Purdue men. That says a lot. Caitlin Clark, incredible draw. Don Staley, incomparable effort with the champion South Carolina Gamecocks. What a great season by the ladies.
Yeah, it was all the way around. And for Vic Schaefer to get to his third Elite Eight in 4 years.
He's not going over that hump sooner or later, Vic Schaefer.
You know, and Connecticut lost, five players to season-ending injuries that were high contributors, and Vic lost Rory Harmon, which isn't the same as four or five, but for them to do that and still win 33 games and get to the doorstep of the Final Four is impressive, you know, and he gets Rory back next year, but he doesn't get Deanna Gaston back.
E. Gaston threw up the deuces, Duck. She's out of here. She's entering the transfer portal. That's a very important cog. She has been I'm saying it in the nicest way possible. She has been a junkyard dog. Every team needs one, Duck. She cleans it up on the glass. She's a shot blocker. She's a hustle player. I just think that it's hard to replace a Deanna Gaston. She's going to be missed. A very important piece to what he's built over these last three seasons.
Yeah, I talked to Vic this week, and he didn't want to lose her. But, you know, I don't know if you'd say what they have with the logjam in the front court, but that's their strength. That and Madison Booker was their strength this year. They could just kill people in the paint. And, you know, Tater Jones was in and out of the lineup, it seemed like. And so Deanna Gaston didn't want to play the five position. She's more of a forward and you know, she averaged, 8 points, 4 rebounds, and was sixth woman of the year. So she had a strong year, but, you know, I think she started 32 games the year before and only 4 this year. So she was coming off the bench, playing at the five. She even had her own ankle sprain issues and missed some time. So if they lost anybody, you know, it's preferably they lose somebody, a post player. Because that's still
the
strength of the team.
Yeah, and a non-starter. It hurts him in the depth department, but he's still got Amina Muhammad coming back. She's a D type, a little bit taller than D, can guard multiple positions, but she's not as bulky. So when Taylor Jones sits, maybe Texas isn't going to be as formidable or strong on the interior.
Well, they get Leah Moore, and she'll be a full year removed from her torn ACL injury. And she just got better and better and has great drives to the bucket. And, you know, Justice Carlton is a 6'1 forward freshman, one of them that will be coming in this fall. And
she came back from an ACL to play this season.
She heard it in July and was ready for the start of the season, said. And
Still wearing a knee brace, though, of course.
That's impressive to her work ethic. Of course, it seemed like every one of Vic's players seemed to have a knee brace, it seemed like, nowadays. So that's going to help big time. Jordan Lee, the six-foot guard, who really wild. She's athletic. And Vic told me the other day, he said, yeah, she's going to be a monster. So, you know, you put all that with Rory Madison, you know, Aaliyah Moore, Taylor Jones coming back, you know, Shea Holly, you got another year.
Come on now.
She's the Brock Cunningham of the women's team. So maybe next year's the year. I saw it ESPN rankings, and they have Texas number two, you know, right behind South Carolina, and LSU is seven. So they're going to go into Shark Pit there in the SEC with back-to-back defending champions in South Carolina and LSU. But Vic's built for a deep run, for sure.
Hey, before we get to football, I wanted to ask you, so the women don't get any money for making the tournament or winning a game. But ESPN has signed a $900 million deal with the NCAA for the NCAA's championships, all the championships. And the women's tournament is valued at about $65
million. Mm-hmm.
I think it's time that they need to break off the women a piece of the pie for advancing and for making the tournament. I'm not saying anything along the lines of the $2 million the men get, you know, per unit, but I think the women have shown with their turnouts, with the attendance, with the interest that's growing, and with the star power that, I think that it might be time to give them a little bit of incentive for growing this game like they have.
Yeah, Tara Vanderveer said as much at Stanford on her way out the door before she announced her retirement, that she not only wants teams awarded units for how far they advance in the tournament, she wants the NCAA and ESPN to post-date it, you know, and I don't know how far back you go, like 5 years or
how. I don't know about all that, Tara. I don't know about reparations, Tara. I don't know about all that. I'm not sure.
No, they deserve it. They deserve units for sure. I mean, you look at.
Yeah, they deserve units. The game has been really fun to watch for a while now, Doug. But I'm telling you, the star power, the sheer star power in the women's game has carried the day. They won the spring, Doug. They won March Madness. Caitlin Clark, Paige Buckets, Juju Watkins, Madison Booker, Camila Cardoza. They won it. Angel Reese. There are stars just falling from the sky. And Hannah Hidalgo, Madison Booker, and Juju were all freshmen, Doug. They're coming back. The game is in good hands. And Paige Buck is going to be leading the way next year.
And one of the advantages the women's game has over the men is that the women stay in one place longer.
I love that.
Mentioned Deanna Gadsden leaving, but – you know, Caitlin Clark's been her whole career at Iowa, you know, and so I think the stars stay put more. I don't know. Does anybody ever leave UConn to go somewhere else? It sure doesn't seem like it. So, but yeah, it was must watch TV. And I think they averaged over 18 million for the Iowa South Carolina game. And that's the most ever for a non NFL World Cup or an Olympics broadcast. So they're starting
to game, men or women in six seasons.
Yeah, exactly. It's just taking off.
Right. That's
just big. Hope they can sustain it too.
And I think they can, Doc. I think, and the one thing that I wrote in this week's Nuggets, I believe that with the star power, not only Doc playing the game, but they got the legends coaching. Gino Auriemma, Mulkey, Don Staley, those are legends of the game. Vic Schaefer has played in two championship games. He's coached in two championship games. That is a great, great harbinger of things to come. They have great coaches. They have great young players. And they have a product that's only growing. And now with NIL, Duck, these kids are getting commercials. Juju Watkins doing commercials with Joel Embiid now. I mean, so you look at it, I think there's potential for even more growth. And I believe that ESPN is probably going to get the good end of this deal, because I think it will continue. Now, is there another Caitlin Clark out there? I mean, I don't know.
That's not right now.
That's generational, fam. That's generational. Yep. She captured the imagination of a whole country. So I'm not saying that, but I think there's definitely enough star power coaching and playing to continue to grow this great game on the women's side.
And when I asked Vic Schaefer about the next Caitlin Clark, he said somebody somewhere's bouncing that ball in the driveway and hitting buckets, you know. And like you said, you know, Caitlin Clark and all these other great players inspired these young girls. So you're going to have girls 6 years old, 5 years old, you know, wanting to play basketball, wanting to be the next Caitlin Clark. So it's just, I don't know. It was a March Madness like no other, you know, and it was just fun to watch.
On Second Thought.
We're about a week away from the man, much anticipated annual orange white game.
You can feel the heat. You can feel the vibe, the buzz.
I'm not lying when I say it's my favorite part of spring football, Duck. It's my favorite.
The ending? The ending?
You said that. I did not. I know that I did not. But I sure meant it. I did mean it. We've been talking with Sark, and I like that he understands that culture isn't a given. He built this thing where he wants it, but he seems to still be putting his stamp on the program. Yeah, it seems like it's a never-ending process.
Got to do that every day. Culture doesn't take a day off, and he knows that. You know, like he gave you the great quote, you know, in December, complacency is a work of the devil. You know, that's a great quote and a great soundbite, and he knows it's true. And, you know, Exhibit A is a little bit, you know, what happened to Tavondre Sweat. Unfortunately, he got arrested for a DWI just a couple of weeks before the NFL draft. And you and I both know how that works. It's going to hurt his draft stock. I talked to my guy, Lance Dirtline, works for NFLDraft.com, and he said people were already questioning his work ethic and his weight, you know, about 366 or above. And now you add some poor decision-making that he said he could see where some teams are dropping him to a third or fourth round. But he's such a good run stopper and the point of leverage, and he brings a lot of value. He just maybe not a three-down player. What do you think of all that?
I agree. And the one thing that I'll say is if he gets his head on right, and I don't know, Doug, we interviewed Sweat over the last 4 years and enjoy our interviews with him, but we don't really know these kids outside of a formal interview process. He's a polite, respectable to us, funny, gregarious, but when you make those mistakes and you're 2 weeks, Duck, from the biggest weekend of your life, and you're out and you're in a wreck, and you're a DWI, and there's a marijuana odor in the car, that maybe that's a red flag. The marijuana thing, Doug, I'm sorry. I think 80% of those guys in the league smoke. I mean, that's my personal opinion. I don't have anything to back that up, but if someone disputes it, I'd be shocked. I mean, I just think it's a marijuana league. But it's the DWI. It's the racing. It's being out at 4:40 in the morning. Bad things happen after 1 a.m. Duck on the streets, and that will give certain organizations pause. There's certain organizations that have already crossed him off the list. They're not going to even entertain Tavondre Sweat, and that's unfortunate. Because he admittedly was a partier his first couple of years, and maybe the party didn't stop. And that's what some of these scouts and executives are wondering at this moment. And it might not be worth the risk to take him late first, early second. I think he might drop late second, early third.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all shocked to see him go in third round, even though he brings great value because he is a plug-and-play guy against the run. He may be not every down. And you know, if he's pushing 370 or more, you know, his mobility will be affected by that because, you know, let's face it, those D linemen in the NFL, they can run, you
They're
know,
fast.
they can really run. And so, you know, just as Byron Murphy, the second stock has risen like a meteor, you know, could be a top half of the first round pick. You know, people have had questions about Tavondre Sweat. It's not what you did yesterday anymore. You know, they're judging everything you do with a fine tooth comb. And I'm sure they're questioning his judgment to be put himself involved in that kind of situation this close, as you put it, you know, one of the most important days of his life, certainly for his career moving forward.
Well, they're gone from Texas, and he and Murphy, and what's left is a gaping hole.
Yeah.
Of that defensive line. And Duck, I don't know if there's an alpha of the players that are left. There's some talented players. Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins brought it as part of the rotation last year. Jare Bledsoe, Aaron Bryant, Tiala. I'm not going to even try to say transfer from Arizona. Guys like that. Who knows? Who knows if there's an alpha? Sark may have to dip into that portal and find a couple of plug and play types.
I think he will dip into the portal, but you would think defensive linemen, especially edge rushers and interior linemen, got to be one of the hardest things to find. You know, you can find wide receivers and running backs and even quarterbacks that are eager for minutes and playing time elsewhere. But boy, defensive linemen and edge rushers are, man, there's a premium on those guys. And I was thinking, you know, when you and I were there listening Tuesday to Sark, this may be a situation where, you know, you don't have an alpha dog, like you said. You may spread those 60, 70 snaps around four, five, six guys, you know, and as long as you're getting it done from somebody, that's fine. You don't have to have an Outland Trophy winner to be a great defensive line if you got a whole lot of people or similar. And one thing, I don't know, said if you heard the same thing, you were talking about Alfred Collins, who we've been talking about since he was the babe in the womb, you know, that he's not only flash, he sees more consistency out of him. And as you mentioned, Aaron Bryant is another one that, you know, nobody knows too much about. So he needs some guys he can trust more than two guys that are going to play every snap.
Well, here's what he had to say, because he gave a really good synopsis of what they're looking at up front.
You know, I think inevitably everybody's at a little bit of a different stage, okay? I'd say the guy that has probably shown, you know, the most progress up to this point and continues to improve has been Aaron Bryant. I've been really proud of him. You know, I think that, you know, we see the flashes out of Jare Bledsoe. Now we're fighting for that consistency. And I think we're starting to really see the flashes out of Sadir. But again, it's fighting for that consistency. You know, I referenced this guy a lot because I remember getting asked about him early on. I'd get asked about Alfred Collins a lot early on. And that was one of the common themes, right? We'd see the flash. Now we need the consistency. And it took a little bit of time, but I can tell you today, we're getting the consistency out of Alfred Collins. You know, so we're getting the flash and the consistency. So that's really important. Say another guy I'd be remiss to leave out is Alex January. You know, he's flashed some here as well as a young player. So again, that's, you know, when you're a young defensive lineman, using your fundamentals, using your techniques, playing with physicality, still running the scheme, you know, gap integrity, things of that nature in the run game, pass rush lanes in the pass game, all those things are all vitally important. It's not just about winning your one-on-one pass rush. It's playing within the system and within the scheme and using the proper fundamentals and techniques.
Really comprehensive from Sark. I think that you're right. It might be D tackle by committee. And you know what? A lot of these guys don't play a lot of snaps anyway. So if you're going to spread 80 snaps through six guys just to keep them fresh, just hopefully there's a disruptor in there somewhere. Alfred Collins, we've been waiting. And he said it. He said, we're finally getting the flash and the consistency. Can he take it another level? Is there another rung on that ladder? I know there is another rung, but can he reach it, Doug?
If there's not another rung, there's not going to be another rung or after this. If he wants to play in the NFL, man, it's time to show his stuff, you know. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. That may be one of the most interesting things about the game next week that you and I are going to looking for. But, you know, now, you know, you're not going to be able to hit the quarterback. We know that. You know, you and I ran into Arch Manning and Michael Taff at our famous Mexican restaurant, El Rancho, last week. And
shout out to Melvin.
And I was asking Michael Taff, said, "Hey, have you been able to hit him yet?" Pointing at Arch. He's, "Oh, no, come on, man. That's Arch, baby." So the D linemen aren't going to be able to
huge.
Hit him.
Oh, my God. When he stood up and was taking photos with those people.
He's big.
That's a big dude, Doug. That guy is big. He is. He may be 6'5". He may be 6'5". They need to measure him again. I think he's growing. You mean he's up on the enchiladas. We don't want to become a regular. Now we can be regulars at bats because we're fat.
We are.
But I don't know if we want. I don't know if we want the second coming of Jared Lorenzen here at the University of Texas.
He was, you know, he was bragging on some of the DBs like Jalen Gilbo and Jelani McDonald and Makuba, transfer Clemson at safety. And
shout out LBJ.
He had some versatility there. He was bragging on Trey Risner, Jalen Blue. Who else was he bragging? Oh, Matt Golden, your cousin.
He really likes my cousin Matt Golden, and he's the second player. Quinn said Matt Golden had strong hands, and Sark said the same thing. That bodes well. That sounds like a guy that's not dropping a lot of passes, Duck.
And he's a kick returner, so they've got a lot of kick returners. He hadn't mentioned Jonte Cook much the last couple of weeks, has he? So I don't know if he's making strides. DeAndre Moore's another one, but he keeps mentioning Ryan Wingo, wide receiver.
Likes Wingo.
He brags on him a lot. And the other thing, too, you know, that we wrap up this segment is that he said probably in the Saturday scrimmage, you know, last week, the defense probably, you know, had bragging rights, and the offense, you know, came around and kind of showed out for the 2 minute, the red zone drills. And so he said, you know, it's good for the defense to do that. They have the upper hand, but the offense, maybe the defense was getting a little fatigued at the end. And he's really stressing finishing. You know, got to be strong in that last half of the fourth quarter this fall.
And one more thing before we get out of here on this is tight end Juan Davis turning some heads. Garner Helm turning some heads. No Jatavion Sanders. You can't replace a Jatavion Sanders, but maybe between those two, there can be some good production.
Nyeblack. Don't forget Nyeblack.
Yeah.
Isaiah Alabama. Nyeblack.
Yeah,
and he hadn't mentioned the linebacker Blackshear very much from Alabama,
but he did mention Anthony Hill. He did mention Anthony.
Oh, yeah, and Colin Simmons, the freshman edge rusher coming in from where are they from? Duncanville,
so, yeah,
five-star guy. So yeah, I can imagine. Boy, he and A. Hill are going to be impact players together on that field.
We will see. We're gonna do a bigger preview on the spring game. Don't worry, guys. We're all over spring football. We're gonna document. We might get Daniel Davis and Thomas Jones in here to talk about spring football. Who knows? Or we might get a big fish. We've got the lure on the water, and maybe we're going deep sea fishing, Duck. We put the lure out there, and maybe we're gonna land a huge fish to talk about the spring football game coming up in our business that's called a tease. So stay tuned. And that will do it for episode 332 of On Second Thought. Thanks to Rodney Terry for joining us. For Kirk Bowles, the Duck, I'm Seth Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Seth and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.